And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. We're doing Galway Greats now, as we always do after the 11 o'clock news. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by Heather Higgins. Heather, very good morning to you. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, John, and well done on your first show.
Well, thank you, and we're delighted to have you as our first Galway Greats. Heather, talk to me about life growing up first, and take me back to Castle Park in Ballyban. What was your childhood like growing up?
John, I had a great childhood. My mum is Rita Ann Higgins, Galway poet Rita Ann Higgins, and my dad is Christy, and they actually still live in Castle Park, and I lived there with them and my only sister Jennifer, who lives very near them now in Ballybrit. And I love being from Castle Park. Being from Castle Park is who met me today, and I'm not shy about being from Castle Park. It was a rough enough spot then, and it still is now. But you learn to hustle in Castle Park. You know, you learn to be streetwise, and that stood me good stead today in the business environment.
And then in terms of school and that, where did you end up going to school?
I went to Briar Hill as a primary school, and it wasn't as big as it is now. My three nephews go to Briar Hill now, and they love it. But it was a tiny, tiny school. And we went there because Rita Ann went there, and she thought it was a good idea. But back in the day when I went there, it wasn't great for the owl education. Now I came out of it not being able to read and write, but lovely school. And we got a country education. And then I suppose I have to say, privileged, and I ended up going to the Jes, which is an incredible school in Galway, and it still is today, you know.
And what motivated that? I know your dad would have brought you over.
He did. Well, first of all, my mum, Rita Ann, had a great emphasis, obviously, been in the arts and the value on education. So they didn't want us in a local school, I suppose. And we were lucky enough that my dad, as he was a house husband back in the day when we didn't have labels for that kind of stuff, he was a stay-at-home dad. He would drop us into town to school and drop us back. And then in the mornings, my sister was always late, Jennifer. She still is. Always late. Always. In the mornings, I mean. So we'd be sitting in the car waiting for her to come out, you know, and she'd roll out the door and we'd rock into town. I loved the Jes. It's a wonderful school, and I have a lot of friends that I went to secondary school with that are still my friends today, you know. It was a real driving force in my life as well.
Did you stand out there when you came from Ballyban to the Jes?
Oh yeah, I think so. Like, it felt like we stood out a lot more than we probably did, but from my perspective, like, they being a lot of my friends were from Salt Hill. And they were very moneyed. There's no two ways about it. And it wasn't bullying because we were friends or whatever, but they'd slag you, they'd rib you, you know what I mean, about being from Castle Park or whatever. And I distinctly remember at midterms, it felt like everybody, again, I'm sure it wasn't, but that everybody went off skiing, and that was certainly we didn't do if you were from Castle Park. But last year I got to go skiing for the first time and I loved it. and that was the driver behind that. And I brought my son skiing. So we did love it. So I'm one of these people now that ski at midterm, but yeah, it was fun.
It certainly didn't hold you or your sister back, though, because I know your sister now is a criminal barrister, and you've gone on to have your own career as well. But that upbringing and having, I suppose, a chip on both shoulders, do you think it stood to you in life?
I think so, and I don't know if you'd say a chip on both shoulders. Maybe that's what people say, but to me it was a drive to have more. And my mother has a poem, you know, has various poems about it, but it was, we had nothing, John. We grew up in Castle Park, and I hope my parents don't mind me saying that, but we had very little. Like, it was the 80s. Sure, we were just the same as everybody else. And for me, I just didn't want that. Now, that wasn't anybody's fault. It was, you know, socio-economic environment or surroundings, yeah, or whatever. But certainly for me, it gave me the drive that I don't ever want to be broke.
Yeah. Just paint a picture of that for me, though, because I know a lot of people would have grown up in a similar sort of circumstances. Like, what did you not have that you really craved at that time?
Well, we definitely had an abundance of love, and we always, always, always had food. But if there were extra stuff, like, Irish dancing lessons or tours, school tours or any of that kind of stuff. I remember my parents been under pressure to pay for that. You know, Ireland in the 80s, it wasn't a great place if you were from a housing estate. There wasn't an abundance of cash. Sure, my son Oisín had known nothing about that, like if he needs grinds or he needs this or he needs that. Whereas then it was a huge deal to get grinds if you needed them. And my parents paid for all that kind of stuff, but it was tough. I remember it being tough getting that kind of stuff. Anything additional was always difficult.
Yeah. But I suppose simpler days as well. And what, sure, are the, what are the happy moments of your childhood in the area?
Oh God, I had such a happy childhood. I'm in a message group with my friends and my sister and people now that I grew up with. Like Vera is still my best friend today and I grew up with her. You know, we did nothing but hang around street corners and smoke fags and you know what I mean? That was life. You know, that's what we did when we were 16. But still today I communicate with them every day and it's a really good thing as well. Not that I have, sure, I have plenty of notions, but I mean, not that I'm anything big now, but Vera and Jennifer wouldn't let me get away with too much now. You know what I mean? On a daily basis, you'd be pulled up, you know? No, we were very happy. We hung around street corners. That's what we did. And there was a big gang of us. And that was life. And it was great. And we hung around those corners in hail, rain or snow as well. It didn't matter. And you'd be standing out. And now I see it with my own son. You know, he's 15 going on 27. But he's out of the house. But I don't know what they do. But, you know, I'm sure it's similar to what I was doing.
It sounds like it was a very happy time for you. And I know you've picked a piece of music there that embodies that happiness and that love as well. Just talk to me about your first piece.
I've gone with something from Willie Nelson because when there's only myself and Jennifer in it and we'd be out driving with my dad, I'd get to sit in the front seat because I'd be the older sister and Jennifer had to stand in between the two seats at the back and we'd be listening to country music and my father loved Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson and we'd be just driving around the prom listening to that kind of stuff.
Brilliant, here it is. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Now, Heather Higgins stays with me today for Galway Greats. And you up and left the nest and headed over to Fields Greener and further away to London, Heather.
I did. I moved to London just after my Leaving Cert at 17. I think I finished and went straight that weekend and I was gone then for 7 years. Well, longer, but I didn't come back to Galway for 7 years. I went to university in London and then I finished university on a Friday and the following Monday I started at Bloomberg Television, the news agency, and I was 11 years then at Bloomberg. So that was the start of the involvement in media.
And I believe that work ethic really stood with you because you really scaled it there as well.
I did. I started off as an intern and by the time I left the organisation 11 years after that, I was the youngest show producer on the floor. I produced the Money in Politics show at 12:30 for lunchtimes and, you know, by the time I was 28, 29 and it was great. It was a great experience. You know, working in the newsroom is incredible.
And you were there for some of the darkest days in politics, really, from a UK and a global perspective as well.
Yeah, I was in the gallery. I was a live director for about 4 years, as well as being a producer. I was a director before that. I was in the office. I was in the gallery. We were getting ready for the market open, which was the New York opening bell, the stock exchange. And we'd have clean feeds coming in from APTN and these other news agencies. And I can see it now. I was sitting in the gallery and I was looking up and a plane went into the World Trade Center and you kind of catch yourself, you know, and then the second one and then it was full on news. And then obviously I was also happened to be live in the gallery the day of the London bombing. So that was kind of scary. But when you're in the middle of news, as you know, John, when you're in it, like, so you live for those days also, like that's with respect to what happened. But they're big news days.
Yeah. And what was it like coming away from the office on a day like that and going back to your...
They wouldn't let us, John. They wouldn't let us. Hey. They put us in hotels.
Wow.
We stayed working anyway. We stayed live. So it it was almost easier that the crew that were in the gallery, I think we ended up being in there for 7 hours. They changed the on-air talent just because there was so much of it. You know, there was so much happening, but we stayed in the gallery. And then we couldn't get home. I remember London was a complete lockdown for both of them. So, certainly for the London bombings, it was a complete lockdown, but for the Trade Centre, they gave us taxis and brought us home, but we spent most of the, I remember being in there for 3 days almost at one stage, you know, but the London offices were posh and they'd showers and they'd, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So they were big global offices. So they had everything.
And those were the big and the extreme days. But on the day-to-day basis, like, who would sort of the type of people you would have been bringing onto the show and getting your team to interview?
Well, God, it's awful to even say it now, but we had Shimon Peres in, we had Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israelis always like to talk. And nothing was different then. They were always in the office, and, you know, we had Tony Blair and Gordon, I forget his second name, but anyway, him, when he was Prime Minister, Gordon Brown. So, you know, all the, Bloomberg was huge, and the international people came and met at Bloomberg.
And you had a good life there as well. Your job and your salary afforded you the chance to see a lot of the world as well.
Oh, it did, John. That was my big thing. I travelled an awful, awful, awful lot. I was really privileged. When we talk about privilege now, I was really privileged to be a high earner in my early 20s. Like, that's the truth. And I got to do what I still love today, which is travel. And I got to do it with my dad. I used to build up my holidays. I used to work Christmas Day, St. Stephen's Day. You know, you build up the days. And then I'd take a month off in January and we'd go traveling. I've been around the world, I think, 4 times. And, you know, Japan, Tokyo, Bali, anywhere, name it, I've been there, you know, and that's really cool. And I got to do it with my dad, which is great.
And what memories stand out from that time?
Oh, I suppose just the travel, really, and getting to see it. Like, I went to Japan for the World Cup. I remember buying on Oxford Street a Roy Keane jersey and then getting on the plane and heading out to Japan via Russia because it was a cheap flight. So I went via Moscow. Sure, by the time we landed in Japan 3 days later, Roy Keane was gone home and I was out in Japan walking around with a Keane jersey, you know, so... You love that. And I remember paying £80 for it, which was sterling at the time, but I was the only one wearing it.
Now, it's a cliche, but those good times, sometimes they can get too good. And I know you had your dark times as well in London.
I did. I indulged. Is that what we say? I overindulged, and I enjoyed my time in London until I didn't. You know, that's the reality. I no longer drink. I got sober in London. But it was a wild time. I lived a wild life, and I had the money and I had the privilege to be able to do it. But there's a price to pay for that, John, you know. And the price is I don't drink today.
I get you. Now, once you got out of that stage of your life, you ended up falling in love and becoming pregnant with your son, Oisin.
Yeah, I got married, and I got married in St. Lucia, and my family came and we had a wonderful time. And at the time I was pregnant with Oisin, and then we moved to Galway. I returned to Galway in 2008 after living away, I think, I was gone for 14 years. So then in 2008, I moved back and I moved into Munster Avenue. I was very heavily pregnant with Oisin. Yeah.
And your husband, Pat, he was involved in the construction sector, and that was a difficult time, 2008.
It was. 2008 wasn't too bad. I remember being very heavily pregnant with Oisin and lying on the couch and watching Lehman Brothers collapse. And that was a strange one because I love news, to be involved and missing that news story. But again, it was so awful. And then, a year or 2 years later, the knock-on effect, 2009, 2010, as we all know, wasn't good in Ireland either because we were all affected by it. And Pat had been completely out of work at that point because construction collapsed.
And I know yourself were gone up to St. Augustine Street and you were considering signing on to the dole, but you stopped yourself.
I did. I went in and just looked at the queue and looked at the counter and I wouldn't be a bursting into tears kind of girl now, John. But I burst into tears and I thought, I can't do this. So I'd met a friend, because I didn't even know that many people at that stage. I met Elaine, who's the general manager at the Menlo, and she said, I have work, come and work with me. And she was great. And I worked at the Menlo Park behind the bar. I absolutely hated it. I had done bar work in London, so I presumed it would be, in, you know, when I was in university or whatever, that it would be an immediate kickback. But I couldn't get over not working in news and not doing what I did and, you know, being a show producer and a TV director to pulling pints up in the Menlo. So I hated it. Not their fault, mine. It was just the position I was in. So it was from there I got the idea that I had to set up my own business and work for myself. I realised very quickly I couldn't do it.
We'll come to that though, but that sense of emotion of signing on and then not being happy doing that work after the stellar career you'd had and professional life you had, was it a sense of failure or what was triggering that emotion?
I don't know, because I don't overthink it, but I just knew that I had to change it. And the change was very quickly after Oisin was born, I knew that I needed to kind of upskill. So I did a master's in journalism because I had all this experience because I did my primary degree in communications. But then you get to a point at 32, 33 that a primary degree isn't enough, John, you know. So I went up to NUIG and I did the master's in journalism. And that was kind of the change then, you know.
Mm. It was a strong move to make going back to education at that point in your life. I know a lot of people are doing it now. Was it still au fait at that stage?
Yeah, no. And believe it or not, Pat actually had gone back to education as well. There was no work, John.
Yeah.
You know, what were we going to do? Like, so it was either upskill or go on the dole. And I wasn't going on the dole. So there was no choice.
And we'll come to the next part of your life as well. But moving back to Galway, I know something that you would have craved and would have wanted to do for a while. Tell us about your next piece of music, this move back.
I've selected Ed Sheeran, Galway Girl. I just love the song. I just love the song.
Here it is. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Heather Higgins stays opposite me now for Galway Greats. And Heather, you went through a very traumatic time in your life when you did come back to Galway. I know we had the Galway Girl playing there and the highs of it, but life got pretty real and pretty sad very quickly.
It did, yeah. About 10 years ago, my husband Pat was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Oisin was only 6 at the time, and Pat passed away then 2 years later. After a long illness. And it was tough. It was tough on Oisin. It was tough on Pat. It was tough on me. I was widowed at 39. And something like that, John, changes you, you know? It absolutely changes you.
How did it change you?
You realise how fragile and how short life can be. And life is for living. It's for doing what you want. It's for doing what makes you happy. So I changed then. I think I really changed at 39, you know.
And what? It's a difficult time when illness falls on any family. How did it affect your life? Because I know you were upskilling. You were doing a lot of things. How was it affecting you at the time?
Well, financially, I had to keep working. You don't have a choice. You have to keep working. And when you have a young son, Oisin was only 6, we had to maintain a semblance of normality and order. And my family, as ever, are the constant and ongoing support. They're always there. So I leaned very heavily on them. Again, especially my sister, my mum and dad. Sure, that's all I have, my sister, my mum and dad. So they would have carried a lot of the load. Jenny didn't have her boys then, so she was great.
It's amazing as well that you came back to Galway then and you had them to fall back on, as families often do,
yeah,
in tough times as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were there every day of it.
But take me past that then, because I know you said life is for living, and you did go on and you've lived your life up until this day.
I have, John, because I don't know if any of your, if like been widowed at 39, like I really needed to change my life. I got like, it was like, I don't know, a second life. I see my second life starting at 39, you know. Mm. and I changed work. I started working for the Galway. Well, I'd been working actually for a couple of years for the Galway Film Fla at that stage. Mm-hmm. But I really took on a bigger role there in film. And Miriam Allen, who is the CEO, and those of you that know Miriam, she's an absolute rock star. Yeah. You know, she's been one of the people that's really helped my life. And by going into film, and my role at the Galway Film Fla has afforded me so much more with all in professionally, that it's opened the whole world to me. And the ladies there, like Eve Collins, is like my sister. You know what I mean? Like, it changed my life, been there, really. It really changed my life.
And talk to me about it. I know you got involved in a lot of things. Blue Teapot was a big part of it.
Yeah, it started with Blue Teapot, actually. They were my first PR clients. Petal Pilly hired me. And then very quickly, once I was kind of working for them, doing their PR, Lelia Doolin, and everybody knows Lelia, rang Miriam and said, you need to hire Heather, or you need to at least interview her, because Miriam doesn't do what she's told either. So I was hired by them, and then I just got to learn from the best, and she is the best, and I got to learn from her and go to Cannes and go to Berlin and really understand the film, you know, the world of film. Mm. And I love the world of film. And that allowed me then to become a film publicist. And that's mainly what I did then for a number of years. I worked in film and in film publicity, and I work for the IFTAs as well, which is coming up, the yeah. Irish Academy. And a couple of years ago, I was on with Keith, giving him an update from LA, from the car park. I was out in LA for the Oscars, you know, yes. So I get to do really cool stuff.
It's great though, but that also gave you a good insight and opportunity to delve into the arts community in Galway, which we know is quite vibrant.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, my mum would always have been in the arts community. But yeah, as well as the Film Fla, I have for the last number of years worked for the Galway Culture Company, which has been great. And, you know, I do a bit for anybody that's looking for arts PR. So I'd be stuck right in the middle of it. The Town Hall are great, you know, Fergal. It's just I've been really privileged with all the people I've worked with in Galway in the arts community. It's been very specific to film, but I've done other stuff as well.
Now, talk to me about your role as the head of development with the Galway Film Fla and what that entails.
Well, last year, as an example, one of the roles, because of that role, I go out to Newport Beach, which is Southern California, and I brought Mayor Eddie Hoare with me last year. And it's just about, I don't know, I suppose, opening Galway up to the world, really. Well, hopefully next year we'll go to Santa Barbara and Austin, Texas. And, you know, you're building relationships with these other festivals, and you're bringing representatives in, and bringing Eddie out, Mayor Hoare out to see it, and hopefully we'll sign some cultural agreements and whatnot from that.
And it's very clear you got on with your professional life, but you also found love as well in this period of your life.
I did, yeah, which is wonderful. I met Dermot, and he's incredible, and I'm so lucky to have met him. As Miriam says, she found him on the interweb. Google found him. And he's great. He's a gentleman. We're 6 years together now, and he makes me so happy. And he's just a gentleman. You know, he's a lovely fella.
And as well as getting on well together, you work well together as well.
We do, yeah. We work together. We were out in LA a number of years ago, and he said, geez, he said, I think I'd like to do film catering. Well, if he did, that was the beginning of First Bite. So we worked together there. Yeah, it's amazing. It's a film catering company. We can work on any number of films. At the moment, we're the second largest film catering company in the country.
Wow.
And we can be on 4 films at a time if we choose. At the moment, we're on a big production in Dublin. And most of our work is the other side of the country.
Brilliant. And in terms of the future, we'll go career first. What's your ambitions now for the future?
Well, recently, as in last September, I set up Iru Films with Ivan McMahon. Ivan's my business partner, and Ivan has worked in film for 30 years, like really worked in film. He worked with Roger Corman out in the studios at Telegale. Wow. He's another really interesting character. And he and I have a business together now, and we're working in film production. So that's where that's going to go. We'll be shooting twice, hopefully, next year.
Can you tell us anything about them?
Well, I can tell you that last week we had American co-producers in the country doing site visits on Woodlands.
Wow.
So I would recommend that any of us that think location scouting is fun, it's not. It just means don't make a horror film or a folk horror film in a woodland, because all you do 18,000 steps a day in various woodlands, and honest to God, John, one tree looks the same. But I can tell you that we're going to shoot in Kong Woods, which is a good thing.
Wow, brilliant.
Yeah, and that'll be next year.
And your person, I've talked about Oisin, how is he getting on?
He's incredible. He's the light of my life. I do everything I do for Oisin. You know, he's coming up to do his junior cert. He's so much brighter than I ever was. So he stands a real chance, you know, because all the stuff that I've done with work that we've tipped upon, I've had never had any business training, you know. I've had training like on the hustle. That's what you come up in Castle
Street
Park.
Smarts.
Street smarts, plenty of street smarts, but no formal training. But Oisin is smart. He's really intelligent. Like Jennifer has gone on to do law and I've gone on to be okay. And between us, we wouldn't get half the grades that he gets. You know, he goes out to Colossians Curruba. He's a Gaelgor. He's a wonderful young man. And on Monday, we decided that it was time that he starts the bit of study now for the junior cert. So
no time like the present.
Yeah, so he's doing good.
Brilliant. I must say, Heather, I love your energy. I love your attitude and your spirit and everything about you. I won't say vibe because I know that's your last song. Tell us about that.
Vibe. I've picked Krishan Rock. Oisin and I listen to all this American rap music. It's grossly inappropriate and people should not listen to it. It makes Cardi B look like PG, but he loves it and I love it and it's a shared interest. But at its core, it's about female empowerment, and that's why I love it.
Brilliant. Heather Higgins, you are a Galway great. Thanks for talking to us and being so candid and honest in the interview as well. And here is Krishan Rock with Vibe. I must say that is a first for Galway Talks, that song. But that was Heather Higgins joining me on Galway Greats. And thanks, as I said there, for her being so candid and honest. I know I got one text in there. Heather was talking personally about her own life. She wasn't making assertions about council estates in general. So just she was talking personally about that. So I just wanted to make that clarification just in case anyone was offended by that piece. But now, though, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Ollie Turner for our sports review. Ollie, it was a busy weekend in sport and there was success for some rowers as well.
Yeah, Irish crews picking up two medals at the World Cup rowing event in Italy yesterday morning, and Galway interest was very much focused on Fiona Murta and Afric Kyo, who won silver in the women's pairs at Lago di Varese. Philip Doyle and Dara Lynch also did well, taking bronze in the men's doubles. But for the Galway girls, they were up against the reigning world champions Veronique Meester and Jemke Clevering from the Netherlands. So I'm sure there'll be a rematch afoot in Paris coming up in the summer.
Absolutely.
But in terms of preparation for the World Cup, nothing better than yesterday.
Definitely. We have them on the line now. Fiona, good morning. How are things? I know you're back off the plane. How are you all feeling after getting the silver?
Good morning. Yes, good. Yeah, exciting. It was a great weekend. First outing for us this season. And a good start, yeah, to be sure.
Definitely. Afric joins us as well. Afric, you came in on a slightly later flight, I believe, last night. How are you recovering after the silver medal?
Yeah, I was really looking forward to my sleep in this morning, but sure, at 7 o'clock I was wide awake, kind of used to getting up at that time. So yeah, very short-lived sleeping.
It's exciting times though, ladies, because I know all eyes now will turn to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's another event actually in between. So we've got World Cup 2, which is in Switzerland in Lucerne in about 6 weeks. And there'll be a lot of competition from outside of Europe there as well. So there's another step and block on the way to the Olympics, let's say. So this past weekend now was a good starting point to just see how we've been doing all winter, to see what we need to work on for the next 6 weeks and then building on there.
So Fiona, how different, Fiona, is it as a pairs? Because, I mean, you're still relatively new as a team together.
Yeah, so the weekend was our second regatta together as a pair. And we've had the winter now to kind of build a better feeling of the boat. It's been a challenge for sure, but really rewarding. It's been a really enjoyable process. So it was nice to see like what we've been doing, what's worked, what needs to be tweaked a little bit better. And like I said, we've got this next 6 weeks to kind of fine tune that a little further and then go out and see what changes we can make and how we can improve.
How different is the dynamic Afric from the fours?
I suppose just having one person responsible for, you know, the left or the right side, bow side, stroke side of the boat, it's a lot different. You know, if I make a change or if Fiona makes a change to how she's rowing, you can really feel it quite quickly in a smaller boat, whereas in a four, it's, I suppose, more about the synchronicity of all four together. But yeah, you can really kind of feel your the impact you're making straight away. So there's great feedback in, I suppose, a small boat versus maybe a bigger boat.
Is there much psychology involved in trying to take down this Dutch pair then, especially when it comes to the Olympics?
Well, we've been racing these girls for years. Like, they were actually in the women's four as well when the Tokyo cycle. So we've had a lot of kind of tie finishes with them. You know, we raced them at Europeans, and I think there was 0.4 between us in the women's four back in 2021. And then obviously on Friday we raced them and there was a second again between us. So yeah, you know, we really feel like we're kind of clawing back up into them, because I think they beat us by over 7 seconds during the summer. So yeah, we're closing the gap, and I think they kind of feel that too. They were kind of laughing with us at the end of the race, and yeah, you know, they're great competitors, and you know, they're great to chat to between racing, all that. But obviously, you know, we're all very competitive, and we obviously want to be on the right side of that close margin at the end of the race.
Mm. And finally, Fiona, what's the homecoming be like, or are you back in Galway yet?
We're back in Cork. So we flew into Cork last night. We're back training. We have a day or two to just kind of decompress, and we're back into it then on Wednesday. So we fly to Italy. We're on camp in 2 weeks. So we've got 2 weeks at home, and then we're on a camp before our next event. So it'll be all go, to be honest. But yeah, we have a day or two now to just relax a little bit.
Well, it's all very exciting, and best of luck with it as well. And thanks for joining us, Fiona, Myrta and Africa. We wish you all the success in the competitions going forward as well. Ollie, it's been a very busy weekend all over the place. In golf, we have a new sensei, a new master.
Well, he's not so new in that he won it 2 years ago, and he is clearly the master of all in golf at the moment. He's a very dominant figure, John. Scottie Scheffler came in as the warm favourite, and he won as a favourite. A bit like I Am Maximus in the Grand National on Saturday at Aintree. He was a good favourite, and in fairness, anybody who would have had a bet on him beforehand would have been pretty confident even before the final round when he went in with a one-shot advantage. He's just a very... He doesn't make mistakes, and his dominance is almost akin to Tiger, not quite at that level just yet, but even psychologically, any time any of the other players made a move in the early part of the round and got close to him, be it Max Homa or any of the guys who were hovering, you know, Ludvig Åberg, as soon as they did something, then Scheffler hit back and straight away opened up a gap in the start of the back nine and was never going to be caught. In fairness to Ludvig Åberg, who played in the Ryder Cup, this was his first major tournament, which is hard to believe, and he finished second. And bar Scottie Scheffler, he was definitely the best of the rest and looked like he was the guy who, apart from one mistake on one hole, was by far the calmest and looked all the world like he would have won it in any other year. But Scheffler is unstoppable at the moment, and you can't really see him beaten in any tournament. I mean, he finished second, I think, in one of his last five tournaments, but he won the other four. So in fairness to Scheffler, different level. And for Rory McIlroy fans who would have felt this was a great chance for him to complete the Grand Slam, like they say it every year, there always seems to be somebody. But in fairness, like, McIlroy's 15 shots behind Scheffler in a 72-hole tournament. And that's just ridiculous. Like, McIlroy, that should not be happening. So there's something going on there. Everyone always, when Rory has a disaster, they keep harping on about the caddy and, you know, should something change. Mm. But something should, because a bit like, as the French say, plus ça change, everything that stays the same will continue as it is. Mm. But that was the golf last night at the Masters. Utterly dominant from Scottie Scheffler. There was plenty happening yesterday as well in terms of Gaelic games and rugby. We're going to hear from Pete Wilkins, the Connacht coach, in a moment, because Connacht's European adventure ended against Benetton Treviso, losing in the quarterfinal of the European Challenge Cup, 39 points to 24. There were a few fleeting moments in the second half, John, where I felt Connacht were just getting within touching distance, and if they got the next try that they might put pressure on, but they were always being kept at arm's length by Benetton, who march on to the semi-finals. And for Connacht, five games to go on the URC. They probably need to win all of them, including Zebre next Saturday, if they're going to make it through to the top eight. But for Wilkins yesterday, hadn't really any complaints in Italy.
Tough conditions, you know, we were determined coming in that wouldn't be an excuse for us. But it's certainly tough, but I think, you know, the better team won. And I don't feel like we lacked effort, but I think certainly some of the errors that coughed up possession, coughed up three tries in the first half, which is going to be tough from any game, let alone a knockout game away from home. So I think we have to acknowledge a lot of those errors came on the back of Benetton's pressure. I thought their kicking game was excellent, as we know it is. I thought the pressure at the ruck and the kick chase line arriving, you know, it meant we were constantly firefighting in that, and with that becomes, you know, with that comes errors. So, as I said, it wasn't for lack of trying. I'm proud of the lads' effort, but we just weren't accurate enough today, and I think Benetton got reward for that pressure.
Now, also to Gaelic Games, it was heartbreak for the Galway senior camogie team, Ollie, and for Tipperary, it was almost like an All-Ireland win.
Look, Galway have won the last two. They've been in five league finals in a row. This is certainly not, a day where there'll be any recriminations or anything like that. Just conditions turned poor just in the last few minutes when Galway were chasing it and made life really impossible for Kerry Dolan and for the free-taking. Now, we had got that weather front early on in the afternoon. I mean, it was absolutely shocking around lunchtime here in Galway. So eventually it came to Dublin just at the wrong end of the National League final. But I think for the bigger context of Camogie, it was a good result. The Camogie needs Tipperary to come back strong. I said this to you last week. You know, it needs more than just Galway, Cork and Kilkenny, which it's been for the last decade. Mm-hmm. So Tip now have kind of nudged their way back into the top table. And good luck to them. They won it by a point, 113 to 15 points. The only goal arrived in the second half, and it coincided with just a few moments before that, Galway fullback Roisin Black being forced off with a hamstring injury. So she'll take a couple of weeks to recover. But Galway manager Cathal Murray updated us on Roisin and knew it was a key moment.
Roisin pulled her hamstring, so hopefully it's not too serious. But yeah, it was probably a turning point in the game, and it was, you know, they got 1-1 straight after she gone off. It's a big learning point for us, definitely, as a management, and I'm sure for the players as well. You know, we probably just needed to batten down the hatches there a little bit for a few minutes and get ourselves organised. And in fairness, we tried to do, but Cup Park is a big pitch too, and it's very hard to get on and change everything. But yeah, that's certainly a learning point, and there's plenty of learning points. In fairness, look, we're hugely disappointed in there, but you know, that's the way it goes. We're also hugely proud. You know, it's five league finals in a row, and yeah, we've won three of them. So we're still, you know, from that point of view, we're good. But look, it is all about the championship. We know that, and you know, we've a lot to prove on it.
In ladies football now, Ollie, there was a thriller. Was this one played in Bacon?
Yeah, it was. Great game. Under 16 Connacht final, Galway Mayo. Mayo won it after extra time, 218 to 310, but really augurs well for the future rivalry between those two counties going on at senior level. And of course, Galway Mayo will meet next month in that senior decider.
Yeah, and now on to motorsport. And Croholt's Aoife Raftery had her best performance to date.
Yeah, in an FIA European Rally Championship event. So she competed in this last year. She really is an up-and-coming star. Her best result last year was in the Czech Republic. She's competing with all of the men and all the top performers in it. But she finished fourth overall at the Hungarian Rally, which is some performance from Aoife, and she's really only going from strength to strength, and she's got a couple more of those FIA European Championship events between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, in soccer, plenty of happening across the pond and at home.
Yeah, Manchester City won the Premier League yesterday, pretty much. Arsenal and Liverpool both losing at home. What was that about? So, I mean, they've pretty much handed the title to City, who are now 2 points clear at the summit. And Liverpool losing 1-0 at home to Crystal Palace in an extraordinary match where Liverpool missed so many chances. Mm-hmm. And Arsenal then losing 2-0 to Aston Villa, who are excellent. So you'd have to say both Liverpool and Arsenal, just at the wrongest time of the season, came a cropper. One game in the Airtricity Premier Division this evening, that's Bows against Dundalk. Kick-off at Dalymount there is at 7:45. And cross-channel in the Premier League tonight, Chelsea play Everton from 8 o'clock. Just to finish off, I don't know what horse you got in the Grand National Sweepstake, John. Did you get any money out of it?
new arrival.
Okay. You're still waiting for him. I Am Maximus stormed clear to win the Grand National for jockey Paul Townend, trainer Willie Mullins, and more importantly for Galway Bay FM's John Mulligan in the sweepstake. The 7-1 joint favourite triumphed by 7.5 lengths at entry from runner-up Delta Work, with Manella Indo third and Galvin fourth. Again, an utterly dominant race for the Irish at Cheltenham.
Thanks, Ollie.
At entry.
And that is where we make our leave for today's programme. Do join us again tomorrow morning on Galway Talks. We have a number of issues already lined up. We'll be looking at a new documentary on women's football with members of Galway United FC. As well as that, She Rose, Galway Symposium aims to promote women and diversity in politics. A number of guests joining us in studio. As always, we have our Garda slot. We have a musical act, Death Milkshake. Strap yourselves in for that one. It's a live loop pedal. And it's not like Ed Sheeran, I'm told. We have trending topics, the Evergreen slot, and music mornings tomorrow. This time it's the turn of U-Man, a.k.a. Brian Flanagan. So it's a busy programme tomorrow. That's it for this morning. My thanks to Sean O'Malkiran, who produced, and Siobhan, who took your calls and reception. I'm John Morley on Galway Talks. Up next is Ronan Lardner with the Livewire. Have a very good afternoon. Stay safe.